Hello, hello, and welcome to the Gardner Carney Leadership Institute podcast. The GCLI has developed the pedagogy of leadership, which combines brain science, leadership studies, cultural competency, and developmental psychology. Its mission is to teach teachers to teach leadership to students. This is your go-to podcast for discussions, tips, and stories for leadership and leadership education. And I am your host, Catherine Birdie, but please call me Birdie. Our world is in dire need of people just like you, people who are committed to building communities of leaders, young and old. So let's get busy leading the next generation of leaders, and thank you for joining us. Hello, hello, GCLI. I hope you know that all guests are very special to me. I am always blown away by the time and expertise our guests give to the GCLI. Today's guest is no different, but he is particularly special to me. He's an attorney by day and a Holocaust historian by night. He speaks to groups about digging into family history through storytelling as a means of forging identity and self-awareness. He has two beautiful young adult children who cling to his every word and is married to yours truly. GCLI, I am so excited and very proud to introduce you to my husband, Chris Birdie. Hiya, Chris.
Hey, Catherine.
Did you know that the GCLI actually calls me Birdie?
I think I did, but I'm not surprised.
Well, I know that you're often called Birdie too, so we're just going to call this the Birdie Birdie Show.
Okay. Yeah, more people call me Birdie than my first name.
I'm sure our kids are very proud right now.
Very proud.
Also, did you know that this is Jewish American Heritage Month, May?
I actually did not until you told me about that last night when we were preparing for my first ever podcast.
Well, I'm very excited for you to be on the call, and I'm very excited for you to share the story. Before we jump in, I'd like to give a little bit of background and speak for you just a bit. Is that okay?
I don't know why you're asking for permission. Usually you don't, but by all means.
All right. So you are on the Alabama Holocaust Education Center's board and serve as a volunteer on their speakers bureau. And one of the many reasons you do this is for educational purposes, and you have chosen a family story as your means of getting to know yourself, educating others about the atrocities of the Holocaust, and hopefully doing your own part to create a more peaceful and understanding world. In the interest of time, we're going to focus on your father's story and the identities your family was forced to forego to assimilate into American culture. But I also want to acknowledge that this has happened to many people in many cultures, but today we're just going to focus on your story and the story of the Jewish immigrant during and after World War II. Cool?
Sounds good.
All right. So let's start with you first. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how this journey started.
Sure. So I turned 50 about 4 years ago. And I decided that I was going to spend some time taking Socrates' advice. And he said, supposedly, that the unexamined life is not worth living. And I took that to heart and spent a good bit of time sort of thinking about what I had done up to that point, personally and professionally, what I had left undone up to that point, personally and professionally, and what I wanted to achieve for the next however many years I'm lucky to be around with you and our family and friends. So growing up, one of the things as part of that process of examination that I realized was that I had not focused much on my origin story, which is that I am a first generation American. My father is an immigrant. I've known that my whole life, and have spent the better part of my life ignoring it and not really asking questions about it, understanding it, and kind of how it forged our family's values, and felt like that was, if anything, something that was important to me at this stage in my life to really spend some time examining. There's another great quotation by Shakespeare that says, there's a story in all men's lives. And that was sort of what led me down the road that, we're here talking about now.
All right. So, and to that end, I know that's part of your kind of mantra to others, as asking people to dig into their stories and use that as part of their own self-awareness and personal journey. But when you did so, you learned a lot about your grandparents, and it started in Austria. Your dad was born to Austrian Jews in wartime France. Austrian Jews in wartime France. Tell us a little bit about his early years, if you will.
Sure. So my grandparents were, as you said, Austrian Jews. They were forced out of Vienna in 1938 and made it to Lyon, France. My father was born in December 1942, and at that time, the entire country was occupied by the Nazis. He happened to be born with blonde hair and blue eyes, and my grandparents named him Christian and baptized him on Christmas Day in Lyon, France in 1942, on December 25th, 1942. We actually have his birth certificate, or a copy of it. So that was a common survival strategy for Jews at that time, was to pass as Christians, and they did everything they could to survive. And that was certainly an outward means to ensure he had the best chance for surviving under those difficult circumstances.
Tell us a little bit. I find this story actually very, very fascinating. Tell us a little bit about your grandfather's profession and how that helped their survival story.
Sure. So my grandfather, his name was Siegfried Berdichevsky. He was a master carpenter. And when he got to Lyon, he had difficulty finding work, but was hired by a Frenchman to work in his shop, in his furniture making shop. One of their survival skills, in addition to passing, was they lived in a two-bedroom flat with no bathroom. They had a bathroom down the hall. And my grandfather built a false wall in the closet of their flat. Their building where their flat was routinely searched by the Gestapo throughout their time living there in the war. And so they would hide behind the false wall that my grandfather had built in their closet to their flat.
So your dad would have been approximately 2 years old, 3 years old.
Yep. 0 to 2 to 3 years old. And certainly would have been probably carried into that false wall in the closet, along with his aunt, with my aunt and grandparents.
Let's back up a bit. You know a little bit about your dad's grandfather's story, your great grandfather. He was in one or two concentration camps, and he survived both. And your grandparents were also part of the resistance. How do you think these stories showed up in your family story?
Sure. Well, I've always thought of my dad and my grandparents as just imbued with grit and hard work and selflessness and humility. And those characteristics, although I can't say I was initially aware of them, you know, in grade school, certainly by the time I was sort of aware of the world and how hard my dad worked and seeing what he did to provide for us, it became evident the characteristics that they developed in order to survive, to the extent they didn't have those characteristics already, were something that absolutely were fundamental to my development and my belief system.
I think that at once makes your story all the more beautiful and painful, but that good came out of the pain is really I think that's really the end of the story. But backing up just a bit more, they eventually come to the United States through Ellis Island, and they were forced to give up some key identifiers, some key identities when they came to the United States in order to fit in. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. So in probably increasing level of difficulty, starting with their language, obviously, they came over in 1949 on the SS Sobieski. My grandfather built a trunk that had all of their worldly possessions. My dad still has that trunk. But the first thing they did was change their name. So my great-grandfather's name was Fischel Berdichevsky. His wife's name was Feigl Berdichevsky, and they changed their names to Fred and Fanny Berdy. That certainly was a common thing that immigrants did, I think less so today than back then. But they, you know, certainly had to do that. It was easier to say, probably, and wanted to feel like they had more American names, if you will. The second thing was in probably the most difficult was giving up their faith. So, we talked for just a second about my dad being baptized, but fundamental to that decision and that story was that they were both Jewish, and my grandmother and her family were Zionists and believed very strongly in the need to establish and develop a recognized Israeli state. She wanted to go to Israel, wisdom, I guess, at that time prevailed, or at least that was the debate as I understand it. So they came to the U.S. My dad says that throughout their early time there, my grandfather was adamant that they keep to themselves and not tell anyone that they were Jewish. About 2 years after, 3 years after they arrived, my grandmother, the Zionist, was actually baptized in the Catholic Church, and then they remarried the very same day in the Catholic Church. So we have my grandmother's baptismal certificate and then their marriage certificate from the same church signed by the same Catholic priest in the early 1950s. And then finally, they had to become American and fit in, and all that went along with that. So, I think that certainly, I never got a sense that they resented any of those things. I mean, this is you and I obviously talking and my sort of reflecting back on the things that they had to do. The opportunity was endless. My dad put himself through college, put himself through dental school and periodontal school, and served in the Navy from 1968 to 1973, most of that time being spent in the Philippines, very close to Vietnam. So, I think while that the challenges that they faced were extremely difficult, the opportunity that was ultimately afforded to them to start a new, safe life here, where they could build a future, outweighed that ultimately.
So this enlightenment that you decided, this journey of enlightenment that you go on at age 50, that's about 4 years ago, it was first personal, and then it has become something that you have decided to share. Why is it important for you to tell this story? Why you and why now?
Sure. Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, just the journey of self-reflection and realizing that maybe I hadn't been as honest with myself as I could have been in understanding who I was. And some of that is just part of, necessarily growing up and maturing. And maybe that took me a little bit longer than others to do. But secondly, I'm not Jewish. I'm Christian. And I came to my faith a little bit later in life when I was a teenager. But I realized how important their story was to share for a couple of reasons. One, just to pay homage to the 6 million Jews who died and were killed in the Holocaust, but also those who survived. My family was dispersed throughout Europe. I've got cousins in Italy. They lived in Switzerland for a while. I've got cousins in Israel, as well as family here in the United States. And so telling that story, paying homage to what they went through and the lessons that they learned, for me is a form of overcoming resistance and overcoming hate and discrimination and standing up to that. And that's something that, you know, I think has probably taken me a long time to come to. Secondly, I think it's important to share the story so that people understand how we're both different but alike. I fundamentally believe that people are more alike than we're different. We all have a story. We all have an origin story to tell and to learn. And we can draw closer to each other by recognizing that the stories may be different, but we share the same values ultimately about treating each other with dignity and respect and creating opportunities for each other as a society to grow and be better. And then finally, and one thing that's really become troubling today is the rise of anti-Semitism. That the Anti-Defamation League, or the ADL, has kept statistics since 1979 on the number of anti-Semitic incidents that are reported throughout the United States. And in 2022, there was a 36% increase of anti-Semitic incidents, which includes both assaults, harassment in person and online, and forms of vandalism throughout the country. Additionally, the FBI keeps statistics on hate crimes, and in 2021, the FBI reported that there were, I believe, that year alone, 861 incidents that constituted hate crimes, with anti-Semitism being the most prevalent form of religious-based hate crime that year. So we know that anti-Semitism is on the rise right now. In 2018, the most violent act of anti-Semitism took place at the Tree of Life Synagogue, where 11 members were killed, and I believe another 6 were injured while worshiping. That trial is actually underway right now. So, you know, anti-Semitism is on the rise. There's more awareness of it, but sadly, the knowledge of the Holocaust continues to diminish, particularly with younger members of our society. Older members of our society, like my 80-year-old father, who's a Holocaust survivor, is still in good health, but many of them are not with us anymore to tell their firsthand stories. And so it's incumbent upon the second generation to keep those stories alive. But a 50-state survey was just conducted in 2020 by the Claims Conference, which is the international organization responsible for processing claims against the German state for persecution in the Holocaust. They did a 50-state survey of focused on millennials and members of the Gen Z generation in the United States, and wanted to just know some basic facts about the Holocaust and see what types of responses they got. And really, there were three key points they focused on. Question number one, have you definitely heard of the Holocaust? Question number two, can you name at least one concentration camp, one internment camp, or one ghetto, of which there were thousands and thousands across the Third Reich in Europe? And did you know that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust? Sadly, 63% of the respondents did not know that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust. 36% thought that 2 million Jews or fewer were killed. And 48% of the respondents could not name a single concentration, internment camp, or a ghetto. And 11% of the respondents thought that the Jews were responsible for causing the Holocaust. So it is compelling when I think about that, as well as my own personal situation, about the need to keep these stories alive as well as the lessons from them.
Well, okay, that's a lot of statistics for us to know, especially as educators, parents, friends. But I know that you have been doing a deep dive into a little bit more current resources. Can you give us one or two?
Sure. Certainly, Ken Burns' documentary on America and the Holocaust is a great, very recent. It just came out in the fall of 2022. I think you can find it on PBS, but it's a great three-part documentary into the Holocaust and America's response to it, as well as the immigration crisis arising from it. The United States Holocaust Memorial Museum has a fantastic website with endless resources for educators and people who are generally interested in understanding either the basics or nuanced information about the Holocaust. And then finally, there's a really interesting movie that I believe is on Amazon Prime called Operation Finale, which is about the Israeli Secret Service, the Mossad's finding and capturing Adolf Eichmann living in South America in the late 1950s. It may sound a little bit dry as I describe it, but it's absolutely a fascinating and true story about his capture. And for those of you who may not remember or know, Adolf Eichmann is considered the architect and implementer of the Holocaust.
Awesome. Okay, there's some good ones. And then lastly, when you began this journey 4 years ago, I know you did not know where it would take you, but ultimately it has rewarded you with what will soon become dual citizenship. Tell us just a little bit about that real quickly.
Sure. So reparations take many forms. One of those that the Austrian government decided to permit was for direct descendants of Holocaust victims to reclaim, and they use that language very specifically, to reclaim or regain what would have been their Austrian citizenship. So it's a little bit, it's certainly easier than it otherwise would be, but essentially you have to prove through documentation that you are the direct descendant of a Holocaust survivor, and through a background check, you will be granted Austrian citizenship. So our family, myself, and a number of cousins and our children, Simpson Margaret, are entitled to that. We're awaiting a decision from the Austrian government right now granting us citizenship.
That's really cool. Really, really cool. So, guys, everyone has a story. Everyone's story is valuable. Chris, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your family, our family's story, and for encouraging others to do the same. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. And I enjoyed it. I'm glad I got to do my first podcast with you.
I am too. Everybody, take good care. Tell your story. Be good to one another. Thank y'all for joining us today, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Until then, visit us at GCLIleadership.org and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You'll find all of our links at the bottom of our podcast. And until then, lead on.